greetings from the home office of Tyler, and they've gotten bigger there, and that's always good to hear. Today's message is about service. It's a new kind of leadership. And I'm sure you've heard me mention it before, but men are naturally selfish. We think of self first. God wants us to learn to think of service first. So let's go to Matthew 20. We'll read the classic statements that Christ made. And setting this up, the two brothers, and maybe others at other times did it as well, they asked for the top two positions in God's kingdom. And Matthew 20, verse 21, actually their mother did, but I'm sure that they were involved in it. And he said unto her, verse 21, "What will you?" She says unto him, "Grant that my two sons may sit, the one on the right hand, the other on the left hand, in your kingdom." And then going to verse 25, "But Jesus called them unto him, and he said to all the 12, You know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them." Being in the Roman Empire, they certainly understood that. They had a whole echelon of people in different power positions. "But it shall not be so among you, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister." The word minister means servant. "Whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant." Verse 28. "Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto or served, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many." And it's kind of the servant model of leadership. I want to look at a modern example of sacrifice for others and thinking of other people. Now, this happened on 9/11. I'm reading the story, but hope we can make it meaningful to you. The author starts off by saying, "We're like one-winged angels. It's only when we help each other that we can fly." Kenneth, on September 11th, Summers, was one of the few people who got injured who survived. He was an early bird. Summers arrived at his desk, the 27th floor of the North Tower, at the usual time, 7:15 a.m. After clearing up some busy work, he took the elevator down to a big glass lobby in the World Trade Center to mail some personal bills that were close to being late. He was thinking, "What a perfect day it is out there." And I wasn't outside for more than 10 seconds when I thought I heard a massive train rushing past. Then, boom! I looked to the right and saw someone I knew from upstairs running for cover. I don't even know if I actually looked up. So he ran back inside the revolving door to get cover. And when he got inside, there was swirling, orangish, yellowish fumes that were choking him. A second later, all hell broke loose, he continued. Shards of glass were flying everywhere as the force of an explosion lifted him and threw him out into the street with all those big giant planters that were there. I was on my back and I was on fire. I frankly looked to see if my fingers and toes were still there. And I was lying, you know, next to the big planters. And he kept saying, "I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay." Then I realized I was bleeding from my hands to my head and I was covered with burning skin. So he tried to beat out the flames and rolled and rolled, and, you know, the best he could to beat out the flames. Once he thought he had the flames put out, he started staggering. He looked up and saw black smoke billowing from the top floors of the towers. He thought, was it another bomb like 93? Or maybe it was a plane. People on the sidewalk around him seemed frozen. They were stunned by everything, and nobody would help him. A split second later, there was a whoosh over my head, and he heard a second explosion. Suddenly, the South Tower was ablaze. Fiery debris was raining down all over him, and more fire was getting on his skin. And some of the stuff started to peel. He was charred and black and going into shock. Then a stranger with a kind face started calming down. He said, I want to help you. My name is Stephen Newman. I want to be your guide. The 36-year-old banker from Merrill Lynch, Newman, had taken a car service to work from his home on the Upper East Side. When the first plane hit, traffic stopped a couple blocks from the World Trade Center. He got out of his car and he started walking towards the World Trade Center. I was racing to my office to make sure everybody knew what was going on and just to help out. And just as he saw Mr. Summer staggering on the sidewalk, the second plane hit. And then he said he knew something told him he had to help this man. He said, we have to get across the river. So we helped the injured man stagger. They staggered down to a pier near Wall Street where thousands of people were getting on one of these boats to cross over to New Jersey. Although Newman had only been across the Hudson River a few times, he knew that's what they should do. Hobbling along, he got him on the boat. They were the last two to get on the boat. As soon as they got on the boat, a second gigantic explosion as both buildings crashed to the ground, and the mantle was like a volcano. By the way, I remember seeing this on television. It was like, if you think of those tall buildings in New York as canyons, it's like all this dust and debris, and I guess it was, asbestos, building insulation, and all kind of shreds of glass and material, just waved through those canyons in the financial district like a volcano. And the man said, if he had been lying on the sidewalk there, he would have surely died, as most others were buried under all that stuff. But just barely they got on the boat. He told the captain of the man's critical injuries. The medics were waiting for him when they got to New Jersey. He was rushed to the hospital. In spite of his burns, he survived and is all right. And he says, Mr. Summer says, if he hadn't led me, directed me, pushed me, and helped me, as woozy as I was, I would surely have died. He said, Steve saved my life. Yet in the startling revelation, Newman made the declaration to him. He said, no, you saved my life. He said, you probably saved my life too. He said, if I hadn't helped you, I would have gone back in toward the building to see what was going on. And probably when those buildings fell, he'd have been buried too. So through the sacrifice of one, two lives were saved. It was volunteering of the tallest order. In other words, by doing the right thing, he actually saved his life. And that's kind of the example I want to take out of that story for us. When we have an attitude of servant leadership, an attitude of serve, 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 you actually will help yourself grow spiritually. It's good for you and good for the people you serve. And Christ said, all we want, those of you that want to be the greatest, the way to be the greatest is to serve the most, not high positions. It's the opposite of what people think of when they think of leadership and service and power. People think of, I want the authority, and usually the aplomb and all that goes with it, and the self-importance. But Christ said, no, real leadership is providing useful service. And I was thinking about all the governments that are out there in this current world. Some are much, much worse than others. Our government actually could be a lot worse from what I hear about some of the third world dictators. But in most cases, people get in the positions of high power, and when they either retire or they get run out of the country when the rebels catch up with them and chase them out, or they're about to be indicted, they go to join their riches in Switzerland. In other words, they end their positions of power filthy rich. They serve themselves more than they serve the people. Now, that's the kind of leadership that we have in this world. Can you imagine what the world tomorrow will be like when leadership, even the human leadership, will be based on service? The people that will be given the offices will be those who are in a spirit and an attitude of service, not those who just want the self-centered attention put on themselves. Instead of using people, the ones we will choose for leadership will serve people. And if we can pick that attitude up now, we will grow in character. And you know that kind of character has got to be useful, no matter what you're doing in any situation. And, of course, pray that we get, even in America, we get more service leaders as opposed to the other kind of leaders. But in the world tomorrow, in God's millennium, it will be a paradise, in part because the leadership will have a attitude of service, because God will make sure it's that way. And of course, we'll be, if we make it, we'll be there to help make sure it stays that way. Let's go to Mark 8:35. In Mark 8:35, reads, "For whosoever," this is Christ talking about the work and people, "whosoever will save his life shall lose it." In other words, if your whole goal is, I want to be protected and safe, and there are a lot of ministers who are selling a protection racket. Stay with me and give me your support, and I'll protect you. Of course, they can't protect anybody. Only God can protect you from who knows what's coming in the future. So our focus shouldn't be on protection. "For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for the sake of the gospels, the same shall save it." In other words, you're going to sacrifice for God. That's how you get safety. The focus should be on serving the work, serving the church, serving your employers, serving other people, as is appropriate that you meet. And being a good Samaritan is not a bad idea. Although, obviously, you have to be careful. And I know there are people out there who are, you know, hitchhiking for rides that are criminals. And so I don't want you to get yourself in trouble. But I think you know what I mean by service. And most of all, remember, Paul said the greatest spiritual gift is love. Well, if love is the greatest spiritual gift, can you see how love and service match? Because we have more love, we want to serve other people. And here's one of the things we have to worry about, going back to Matthew 24. We are in the end time. How close are we from the end? 10 years, 12 years, 7 years, 8 years, 15 years. Obviously, I don't know. 4 years. But as we get closer and closer, you're going to see more coldness. Matthew 24, verse 12. Matthew 24, 12. And in verse 12 of Matthew 24, Christ says, now he's speaking about the end times, "And because the iniquity shall abound," in other words, people are very lawless and sinful, "the love of many shall wax cold." So what's the result of lawlessness and sin in the world? People are cold. Now, I'm just thinking of something I saw on TV, I don't know the facts, so the facts may prove to be different. But it appears to be this mother, and you always think of motherly love and, you know, a mother bear, and you know, you think of what motherly love is. There's a young mother whose daughter is missing or murdered, we're not sure which. And as best we can tell, she doesn't seem to be worried about it. She's concerned about her boyfriend and partying, and I don't know, at least that's how it looks. And even if she isn't guilty, there have been many examples. As a matter of fact, there's a whole industry in government now because so many children are abused. Now, they're abused for a whole variety of reasons. You know, often drug abuse and alcohol abuse, or boyfriends that don't, you know, because of divorce, the boyfriend doesn't like the other guy's kids and beats the kids up, and the girl doesn't want to lose her boyfriend, so she allows it. There's a whole industry growing up in courts that just handle that because there's so many abused kids. And if I remember, now I'm only saying this without having any stats, but when I was a kid, child abuse was almost unheard of. I guess there were a few cases, but I honestly can't remember hardly even one. They were that rare. They're almost unheard of. There was more, if you want to call it motherly love, fatherly love, something, family integrity, the overall extended family support that kind of held people up. Well, as the world gets more sinful, as we get closer to the end, that is dropping down, down, down. And you know, as a pile all the kids into daycare, and like, you know, it's only a part-time kid. As we, more kids will be abused, and more bad things are going to happen. You can just sense it, regardless of this particular case. Verse 13, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. By the way, I think endure means stay fast to the principles of Christ, the work of Christ, and to the service model at a time when everybody else is cold and callous and getting colder and colder. What's scary is a lot of senior citizens fall into the hands of their children who turn out to be cold and callous. Scary, isn't it? As we get older, you think about that. Don't give your kids power of attorney too quick. Well, not your kids, but I'm saying in a general principle. Like, not necessarily your kids, but just based on the things that I read about. There are countries in Europe where literally, rather than spend the medical costs of senior citizens, yeah, let's put them to sleep so we can inherit the money. I'm not making that up, by the way. This is the world we're getting into. And you know that kind of thinking is going to be coming to America more and more. Here's a simple little story. While walking through a parking lot, I tripped and fell flat on my face. And as I was lying there, a woman stopped her car, rolled down her window, said, "Are you hurt?" I said, "No, I'm in pretty good shape." And I was touched by her concern, and I was hoping she was going to help me a little bit more. And then she said, "Oh, good. So will you be vacating your parking space now?" Give me your parking space. That's all I want is your parking space. So if we serve a little with whatever opportunities we have, we should serve. A lot of people will say, "Well, I don't have a lot of great opportunities to serve. I'm not a great leader or personality," whatever. Let's go to Matthew 25. I'm just going to touch on a little of it because most of you know the parable of the talents. It's in several places in the New Testament. But Matthew 25, verse 23. What you'll notice about that is even those who only had a little talent, but they served with what little talent they had, they were highly rewarded by God. And that's the point I want to make. Matthew 25, 23. And the Lord said unto him, "Well done, your good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things." You don't have a lot. "I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter you into the joy of your Lord, of thy Lord." So think about it. Even if you're faithful in serving in what little things God allows you to serve in, you're going to be rewarded with great power and opportunity in the world tomorrow in God's family, because that's what the world really needs. Servant leadership. As we get toward the end times, remember, it will be dangerous times. People will be so self-centered. Let's go to 2 Timothy. And I want to just emphasize this one final scripture as we look at the subject of being servant leaders. Actually, if you read 2 Timothy in several translations, it's even scarier than it is in the King James. And when you read it, you know, you think, "Whoa, this is scary." And you realize that's just a few years ahead of us. And it's getting more and more this way. 2 Timothy 3. "Know this also, that in the last days, perilous times shall come." And some translations say dangerous times, scary times, depending on what translation. But perilous, dangerous, scary times. Why are the times, why is the future going to be so scary? Because it's the opposite of servant. It's self-centeredness. Notice, 2 Timothy 3:1. "Perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves." Lovers of their own selves. Covetous. Boasters. I remember when athletes would never boast because, you know, when you hit the home run or scored the touchdown, modesty was always appropriate. Well, you all know how that's the way that's gone out the window with some, at least. Proud. Blasphemers. You know, they don't mind saying bad things about God. There are even books written that blaspheme God now. Disobedient to parents. By the way, that disobedient to parents is interesting. He's not talking about children, because you know, that wouldn't be so appropriate. He's talking about adults who are probably living with their parents, maybe living off their parents, who are disobedient. Because, you know, once your children become adults, they don't have to obey you unless they're there at home. You see what I mean? I think that's pretty much what it means. And probably not respecting the advice of their parents either. We're doing our own thing. You old fogies, get out of the way. Give me your money and never mind. But you get the general feel of what I'm trying to get across. Unthankful. No one appreciates anything. You give them stuff, we want more and more and more. Unholy. Without natural affection. Remember what I said about abused kids? Without natural affection. False accusers, a lie, incontinent, fierce. I remember that video I saw of these girls fight. I guess it's on YouTube. And the girls are just, these are young women, not warrior men. Young women beating, and I would say from the surroundings, middle class young women. Because you think, well, they're in the ghetto and they've been, no, they look like middle class young women. Were beating this girl while she was begging for mercy. And they were so proud of it, they videotaped it. You're thinking, it's one thing to be mean, but that's just stupid, evil, crazy. And you think of words like incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors. Boy, there's a lot of treason in this country. Heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Then he says to turn away from such things. So we're going to be moving in the opposite direction of service to self-centeredness. And just in closing, we have to resist that sort of thing and try to be the person who serves. Inculcate in whatever we do a spirit of service, service, service.